The latest Hilda survey of Australian households asked about pet ownership, and that's the first time it's done that. And it showed that as you age, you're less likely to own a pet. Now, the benefits of pet ownership are pretty well established by now. They're physical, they're mental, they're emotional, some might even say spiritual. So why are lifelong dog or cat owners stopping as they get older? And what can we do to fix that? If you felt some barriers to keeping a pet as you age, tell us why on our Facebook page. There is a huge number of comments there already, really interesting perspectives, some of which I had not considered before. Dr. Jeanette Young is a lecturer in health sciences at the University of South Australia. She's an expert on pets and how they affect human health. Jeanette, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you. Now, these findings from the Household Income and Labour Dynamics in Australia survey, the Hilda survey, are really interesting. In your career as a social worker, you visited older people in their homes. What did you learn then about their relationship with pets?
Pets were their companions and their, you know, little partners in life. And as we get older, our world becomes tends to become smaller and more localised. And so those things, we've all discovered it in COVID, haven't we? The everyday stuff, the stuff around our house, the garden, etc., becomes the world, becomes our universe. And pets are actually part of that. So it's very much, I think, about that sort of the world becoming smaller and tighter. And so the things in it we value more, the relationships within it become more and more important, it's harder to get out. And so when you need company, when you need someone to chat to, the dog, the cat, the budgie, they're there with us and they're there 24/7. So yeah, they're these everyday companions 24/7 for people.
And Jeanette, you found some really compelling, not just physical health benefits, but mental health benefits, didn't you?
Yeah, look, the mental health, mental, emotional, social kind of stuff, I think is actually probably some of the most powerful health benefits. So pets are a really easy topic to talk about. So people chat to each other about pets, and I've certainly had people talking about how grandkids are visiting, you know, to see the pets. And someone was talking to me about a grandchild who'd actually given her grandfather a pet to keep him company, but then that meant she had to keep an eye on the pet and check how it was going and progressing. So it was doing this connecting business across age groups. Certainly, like what we know is that where people are vulnerable, then the way in which pets work for, I guess, most of us is like just companionship and company, and they don't judge us. It enhances that. So if you're in a space where you're a vulnerable person, so homeless, chronic mental health, chronic disability, and as we get older, the sort of the whole stuff about getting older and an element of stigma that still sits around that. Animals don't judge us. They're just these gentle companions that engage with us and they're not part of our human world, and that makes them special, actually, because humans are fantastic, but animals give us something different.
So tell us, sorry, Jeanette, I'm really interested then in why people are giving up pet ownership as they get older. What are the key reasons?
The one line that I hear the most from people is, what if something happens to me? Concern about that. And that's really legitimate, because in fact, if someone has a fall overnight, ends up in an ambulance off to hospital, they may not come home. And the aging residential system isn't particularly set up for people to bring animals with them. So, and what happens is that actually even really early on in ageing, people actually start to go, well, if something happens to me, the animal's going to be at risk. Therefore, I won't, you know, replace the dog when the dog dies, you know, after 15 years, that kind of thing. So it's not really clear when it's happening, but certainly when I've been talking to people around, you know, relinquishment of pets, what I'm hearing is that there's not actually so much relinquishment as perhaps we expected. And it's because of people are making this really careful and conscious decision, which is actually largely focused on the welfare and well-being of animals. They don't want the animals to suffer. The cat, you know, your cat, literally those animals can end up on death row really suddenly.
And there are lots of other interesting reasons that people are popping on our Facebook page too. Everything from the costs, but to also things like worrying about decreased mobility and not being able to care for a pet like that. Jeanette, I'm really interested in the submission that you made to the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety on the importance of pets for older people, because you said things needed to change and they needed to be part of the equation when it comes to caring for older people. Let's look at a couple of different scenarios. What might that look like if someone's still living at home? What kind of support could we give?
I think that when someone's living at home, that's the easy space. And so it's things like if someone's struggling to bend down and get food on the floor for the cat kind of stuff, literally we can be, you know, devising equipment that will, you know, like just lift up the cat bowl, that kind of stuff. So from that simple stuff. And then we've got local government programs that are looking at things like matching people with dog walkers. I think it's also linked to things like shopping and including food, pet food in budgets and in shopping volunteers, picking that sort of stuff up. So it's kind of, it's about supporting someone at home holistically. And I think we do that not badly. That's quite good. There are some gaps though in terms of, say, emergency care. So if someone has a fall and gets picked up by the ambulance, what will happen to their pet? Like, who's going to feed it? That kind of thing. Which generally what happens is families pick it up. But if you have someone who doesn't have family, who doesn't have family locally or is not available somehow, maybe unwell themselves, then that animal's going to be at risk as well. So thinking about how we might actually set up emergency type foster care, but having some discussions with some of the animal welfare, animal rescue groups around that kind of space. We've certainly got some models developing. So that's when people are at home. And I think that stuff needs to be 24/7. I mean, often people have emergencies in the middle of the night. Mm. So there needs to be some way of actually, okay, here's the emergency number, the ambos will ring and, you know, get Tiddles looked after. We've done a little bit of... I've got a dream about actually older people in communal aged care being able to foster animals, because for many of those people, they can't have an animal living with them anymore. But they have skills in looking after animals. They understand them and they want that connection. And so you could actually be addressing two ageing spaces, ageing places, home and communal care, and actually older people supporting older people.
And there's something wonderful about being able to give care and be of use at that point in life too.
Absolutely, yeah. And you'd be, and older people, like, it's that caring for an animal as well. So you actually get this cross-species care happening, which, it's really, it's exciting. It's all on hold with COVID at present, bless it. But looking at those models, looking at things like, how, like, what sits in the in-between spaces between having a pet and not having a pet. So
I would have thought that was a fairly black and white equation, but no, there's a lot of in-between ground, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There is. And we've been doing some work around that. And so that's included people when we're actually doing what we call co-design, talking to older people about this topic. And that's where people always start talking about the what if something happens to me and, you know, I worry about the animals kind of stuff. We're talking about things like animal fostering, about people sharing animals, talking about perhaps having almost like a dating service, you know, the online matchmaking, where people could actually be matched with, say there's a household of really busy people that don't feel they have the time to actually have their own pet, but maybe there's someone in their neighbourhood, someone older who's worrying about not being able to get their dog out for a walk so much. Could you be matching those people up? But we really need to actually have a structure, because once you start to dig into that, it's the concern about people you don't know. And so we need to have some sort of, it needs to be structured. It needs to be thought through and managed through.
And Jeanette, you've put a lot of thought into particularly the residential aged care scenario. I think for our last minute or so, we should talk about that, because there are quite a lot of barriers, aren't there? Staff might not be trained or paid enough to be able to take on that responsibility. And I think only 18% or so of residential aged care facilities allow residents to live with a pet. How could we change that? How could we make those structures better able to support people to connect with animals in aged care?
Well, I think I think that funding aged care better is actually one of the really fundamental things that we need to recognise. Because at this point it is just so relatively underfunded that staff are just overworked and rushing to care for people, let alone having to think and pay for actually the care of animals. So I think that that needs to be taken into account. But then there are some creative ways that people can look at that, and how you can also hook into the animal loving staff's position as well and engaging them in the topic. So generally when I'm talking to people, the concerns tend to be around the hygiene stuff and the risk factors. So older people have much frailer skin, for example. A little scratch can become quite major. People are really concerned about that. But those things can all be worked through systematically. So, you know, things like perhaps having some novel partnerships, so getting animal care services coming into aged care to look after the animals, so that you've got animal expertise in there. They can do things like clipping nails, even on cats and things like that. So you can have those partnerships between human-animal services. At this present point, there's really not a bridge. I mean, I could anticipate in time that we will actually develop workers that are specialised in both human and animal needs.
There's always a way, isn't there, if we yeah. just value it enough. Jeanette, I wish we could talk more about this, because the conversation on our Facebook page is bonkers. Clearly people are very interested in this. But I thank you so much.
Look.
Yeah, exactly. Our own life matters. But thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Jeanette Young, lecturer in health sciences at the University of South Australia. And you remember that Jeanette made a submission to the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety. The final report is due in February.